Hey everyone, today I am delighted to bring to you Lori Guest. Lori is a certified speaking professional and owner of The Guest Encounter, the speaking and training firm she founded 2 decades ago, holy cow, to rid the planet of uninspired customer service and ineffective teams, not to mention unproductive thinking and behavior. Lori doesn't waste time admiring the problem or pontificating with rationale no one can relate to. She's known for jam-packing her programs with usable information, clear action steps, and tangible tools people can put to use right away in the real world. She was an award-winning customer service columnist for a healthcare journal and the author of the book, Wrapped in Stillness, a personal retreat guide. I got to know Lori through the National Speaker Association, and I can tell you, even when she's speaking to fellow speakers, she is all about value, and she has poured so much in to me, probably more than she will ever know. Lori, thank you for being here with me this morning.
Hey, it is a pleasure, Phil. Thanks for asking.
Heck yeah. So you do so many cool things. I honestly didn't even know the name of your company. I thought it was the whole Solutions Are Brewing because you've got that whole coffee thing cooking.
I did. I rebranded this year. In fact, it hasn't even, at the time of this recording, hasn't even rolled out yet. It is brand new. So that was a big decision whether to let the coffee motif go or not, but it was time. So.
Yeah. So the coffee. So you like coffee, I'm guessing?
I do. But actually what I was selling years ago was the emotion that I think goes with coffee. And I was trying to figure out how to say in the speaking world to the clients who are considering me, my deal is you've got to feel like you're meeting over coffee with me, whether that be virtually or in person. I'm listening to you. We're having that feel. It's sort of like the Starbucks thing. You know, Starbucks, they were so brilliant with the way they sold coffee. It's an experience, right? It's not just the brew. You can get that anywhere. But it's about how you feel when you walk into a Starbucks and you sit across the table from somebody. And I was trying to take that feel and bring it to the speaking world. And I've been amazed over the, I don't know, probably decade and a half that I had the Solutions Are Brewing, how often people wanted the whole coffee thing to be the theme of the meeting, you know, so worked really well for a long time, but I'm going in a slightly different direction. So it was time to dust it off. And I think it's good for us to rebrand every, I don't know, decade and a half or so.
Yeah. Well, reinvention, right? Blow it up and start again, I think is great. And keep the lessons that we learned. I mean, you know, the old story about if I only knew what I knew 25 years ago, well, rebranding does that for us, right?
Oh, it sure does. And I wish I did know then what I know now, but hey, that's part of the growth process.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. So talk to me about your background. I mean, how did you get passionate about customer service? Why does it matter to you?
My background was in healthcare, and I started out in ophthalmology, and we were known for our customer service. So we had a reputation in our industry as being the ones to watch, and I was involved in the leadership team that just really made a commitment to how can our patients have this wow in customer experience that goes beyond the eye surgery. And so I think I was raised in it, and I didn't realize until I left, I've been gone now, gosh, about 15, 16 years out of that organization. I didn't realize until I got out in the world how special the stuff we were doing, how special it was, until I found out how many businesses weren't doing it. And that's actually how I got started as a speaker, is that people called and asked if I would come and share our secrets on great customer service. So I've always been passionate about it. And I just never got past it. For a while, I went in a different direction, tried to do just the humor route, but I always came back to businesses thrive with great customer service. And I just love that topic. So I'm back in that zone now.
Cool. So what does that mean? Like, define great customer service. What does that mean for you, Lori?
Well, to me, great customer service is not the robotic, we've been trained to speak to you this way or to do it this way. It's not robotic. It is really being engaged with the customer and listening and reacting and wanting to be a solution for them. That's why I named the company originally Solutions Are Brewing, is because I think that's what customer service and sales is all about. You got a problem, I got an answer for you. Or if I don't have the answer, I know somebody who does. It's that connection, that gateway to the answer. And I think that's what customer service is. We're going to get your needs met, whatever those needs might be.
I like that. I agree. I think that is the thing that often is missing in customer service is, oh, well, that's not my department. Oh, mm-hmm. I don't do that. Oh, that's not my responsibility. And I think that, you know, customers don't care. If they talk to any member of your organization, whether it's an official conversation or not, they just want their problem fixed.
Absolutely. And that was part of what we did at the healthcare place where I worked is we had this rule. Everybody hated it, but it's an interesting rule. Here it is. He who first encounters the angry customer owns them to the completion of their problem. And that's true even if they're not angry, meaning as soon as you encounter that customer, when they speak and have a need, you own it. You don't have to be the one who provides the solution, but you have to be the bridge to someone who can, as opposed to not my department, don't know how to help you, don't know what to tell you, those examples you just gave. And that was a good rule of thumb, and I think it really led to our reputation as being the place to go regionally for eye disease and treatment.
Wow, that's a great rule. I love it. That just makes so much sense. Having that sense of ownership, I think, is where a lot of customer service goes wrong. Mm-hmm. Because there isn't a sense of ownership. It's like, oh, well, I just work here. I'm just a clerk. I'm just a cashier. I'm just an ophthalmologist. I'm just that. In reality, we're all ambassadors for that customer experience.
Right. And I think it goes both ways. Sometimes we have staff people who don't take ownership, but a lot of times I find it's the other way around. We have leaders who don't empower people to be the solution. So in other words, you're in a box so small that you can't move without the threat of getting in trouble. So over time, you just start saying, hey, I just answer the phone. I can't do anything else. Well, that's ridiculous. We can teach and we can empower people to go to the limits of what they're able to do for their customers. So I think that's what service is all about. We've got to empower people to deliver it.
Yeah. Wow. So leadership, that's so interesting. That is what a lot of things rise and fall on, is the leaders really create the boundaries of which to serve it.
Absolutely.
And then we deliver them as customer service folks. So why don't more leaders empower their people more, Lori? What do you see? I mean, I know you've done a ton of this. So what are you observing out there in the wild?
Well, I think most leaders don't empower at a managerial level, not necessarily an ownership level, but at a managerial level because it threatens them. That's my role. My role is to be the decision maker. I'm the decider. I'm the one. That's what my name tag says. So if I'm the manager and Phil, you're my front end salesperson and I give you all my power, then why am I there? And I used to have a fantastic manager. She used to say that the best sign of her ability is when she's no longer needed. In other words, her ability to hire the right people, train them, and empower them so much that she is irrelevant in the day. That is a testament to her success. And that always stuck with me because she did. She always surrounded herself with people who could do her job better than she could, but she didn't see it as threatening. So I think that's part of it. When you get to an ownership level, I think it's all about wanting it done, thinking you're the only one who can get it done right, and not empowering because either you don't believe in or haven't trained enough, those types of things. Where our employer, he was fabulous. His rule of thumb is a doctor should do only what a doctor must do. Examine, diagnose, and treat. And everything else should be done by somebody else. Well, that same philosophy I bring into the business world. If you are the CEO of this company, I want you doing only what you have to do, which is A, B, and C, whatever those three things are. You do not need to be talking to angry customers on the phone. We should be able to handle that. You should not have to pore over the daily numbers. I should be able to give you a summary report and save you time. We could go on and on and on, but the idea is what are the tasks that only you, Phil, need to be taken care of in this company? And everybody else should be doing the rest of the stuff. It just makes sense. It's so simple. It just makes sense.
That is really sensible. I like that. I think a lot of times we're chasing the shiny ball or we're doing other things and we just kind of miss that. But to your point, the whole confidence game, I do think that is a big part of it. If we're not confident in ourselves that we add more value than just doing the menial tasks, it makes it very hard to pass those along to anybody else. You know, the things that other people can do, I think we get trapped because we don't see our true value.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Or you'll see employees that knowledge is power. We used to have an employee that no matter how much we asked her to share how to do certain things, she was reluctant to do it. And then one day somebody said to me, you know why she's reluctant to do it is when other people know how to do that particular task, then her value goes down. Where right now, the doctors act like we can't open the doors without this particular staff person. She's the only one who knows how to do this certain task. Well, you can't have just one person on a team know how to do a certain task. What happens when they go on vacation? They're sick. We fire them. They choose to leave. I mean, there's a lot of reasons they may not be there, and yet the door's still got to open and the world still has to spin.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, I've hated to see anytime there's a single point of failure, it just results in complete failure instead of just a little bit of learning and moving forward. So that's really interesting. So
see, I have a really good example about this before we leave this topic, because this is top of mind for me. I do a lot of secret shopping. People hire my company to pretend to be a customer, a client, a patient, or a patron. And my job is to go in and not with how you've seen secret shopping done before, like with all these, they should use insider words and there's all these things. No, I go in acting and thinking exactly like their end user does. And I evaluate the same things in customer service that your end user does. And so just last week, I had to secret shop 6 banks in Southern Illinois. And there was one consistent fail that they had, is that their whole deal is, my message to them is, don't send me away, ask me to play. So I went into 6 banks wanting to take out a loan. That was my story. And 6 banks sent me away with paperwork to fill out. They didn't start the engagement. They didn't start the relationship. And in one location, we had a secret shopper want to open an account. And instead of just having the 3 steps it takes to open an account that anybody in the bank can do, universally they're saying, oh, Phil's the one who opens our new accounts, but he's not available at the moment. Across the board, it was not let's get engaged. It was send me away, and then maybe somebody will help me later. And this is something I see frequently when we shop. So the people who are listening to this, I really want you to be thinking about, are you sending people away, or are you doing something that begins that engagement, begins that relationship? It might be something as simple as filling out a form. Here's my name, my address, what my needs are today, an intake form. Now, those are not the same as loan papers, but I subconsciously feel like I've made a little bit of a commitment to you because I filled out an intake form. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. No, that totally makes sense. I think a lot of times when we get sent away, we feel like you don't care, like you're passing the buck, like you're giving it away. And that totally makes sense, that the goal should be to keep them engaged and to get them invested in completing the process.
Right.
Whatever that is. So no, that makes a lot of sense, Lori. I like that.
And I see it just so often that if I were to ask them, do you think you delivered great service? I think they would say yes, because they were friendly. They did greet me when I first came in. They did sit down with me. I mean, they did all the things that we would think of as customer service 101. And my whole thing is, okay, yes. And did I go away having started loan process with you, or did I go away with the balls in my court, call back if I feel like it? And they didn't close any of the deals, and we can't have that happening. We got to close the deals.
That's well, and the part of that failure might be at the leadership's end, where they're rating the wrong things, where they're measuring the wrong metrics instead of measuring the real ROI, which is an open account or a loan processed. Instead, we're measuring customer service because we think that's all we can measure.
That's exactly right.
Interesting. I like that. That gives me a lot to think about. So as you also mentioned something a bit ago, and that is focusing on what only a leader can do. So if you're a business owner, you have to focus on only what you can do and on what you do best. And we were talking back in the green room before we started recording about the hot dog cart. Talk to me about that, Lori.
My new revelation. So this one is fresh off the presses. I'm still processing this myself. I think that's why I'm enthusiastic about it. But I was saying that I am so fragmented with a bunch of things going on in my business right now. And I'm a solo entrepreneur. There's no big team here. It's me and some independent contractors. So I'm a small business and I do everything myself. I think that's because I like putting money in the bank more than writing paychecks. That could probably be something holding me back a little bit there, but that's the story. And my fault and greatest strength and biggest weakness is I love to invent things. I love to take ideas and go, oh, how could we do this? This would be really cool. Oh, wouldn't this be cool? And I love to invent it. But then my follow through And my wrapping it all up and then maintaining it, not my greatest strength. So I'm with a very close friend who knows a lot about my business, and we're going down to Southern Illinois to do the secret shopping. And we get to talking about all these different things I have going on. Now, on the other side of my business, my true revenue generating core of my business is Guest Encounters, which is the secret shopping, presenting, and then an online learning tool. And that's where all my attention should be right now. But instead of finishing that project and getting it out to my market, I'm over here with these other really cool ideas. And my friend Lori says to me, I'm a big golfer, and she spoke my language. She says, Lori, you know the deal? You remind me of, it's like Tiger Woods. You've spent years getting your craft ready, and now it's time to tee up in the Masters. You're supposed to be keeping your eye on the ball and knock that thing down the fairway for the big paycheck at the other end. But instead, you're talking about hot dog carts, and you're saying, oh my gosh, you know what would be cool? What if I had a hot dog cart, and I went out into the gallery, and I sold hot dogs, and there could be four kinds of mustard? Wouldn't it be cool? There'd be all these flavors of mustard, and we decorate the cart different, like it's you know, it's in the summertime, 4th of July, it'll be a red, white, and blue, and there'll be flashing lights, and she's imitating me. I'm like, ouch, you're imitating me. She's like, I know, but this is you. And once she explained that, Tiger Woods would never be saying to his colleagues, I'm going to start me a hot dog cart, and I'm going to drive around in the gallery, and this will be really fun, and won't this be cool? Well, I've watched Tiger Woods in his heyday, and when he's done playing 18 holes of golf, what does he do? He goes to the driving range, and he hits balls for another hour or two, because that's how committed he is to his craft. And I had this aha moment that I'm still processing 2 weeks later, in that, how many hot dog carts do I have? How many hot dog carts do you have? And so she made me make a list. And so on our 4-hour drive home, we came up with 8 hot dog carts that I have going on, 8 at varying stages, sometimes involving other people. And she made me make a commitment that I would stop with the hot dog carts. And so the next morning I got on the phone and I started with cart number 1. And I called the gentleman up and I said, look, I'm seeing it this way now. And I basically just started getting rid of these carts so that in this week, all of my energy has been over on the other side, which is in the fairway. And this metaphor to me has just really opened up. When new opportunities came in this week, I thought to myself, is this the cart or is this in the fairway? And you know where a lot of them are? It's in the rough, somewhere in between. It's still playable, but a little harder. It's not out there in the cart range. And that's going to become my whole metaphor moving forward, is I want to be in the fairway, and we all should want to be in the fairway. Yeah. Isn't that fun?
Yeah, that's great. And it's all about, like, you know, where can we have the greatest impact with the least amount of effort?
Because absolutely,
we're already good at it. We've been practicing at this. So if you're already good at something, you should put more energy there. If that's already creating results for you, you should put more energy there instead of, holy crap, I'm going to have to pull out my 3-iron and pull this out of the cabbage and hit it as hard as I can and hope like hell that it finally hits the fairway. Just play the ball, right? Just play the ball where it is in a good spot.
And anybody who's listening who's a golfer knows your round is so much easier if you would just keep it in the fairway. Forget the long irons. Stick with that 6-iron, that 5-iron. You may not get the yardage, but you're going to score better when you're keeping it right there in the fairway. And we totally get that as a golfer. And when she used that metaphor, it totally changed my mind, because Tiger would never be selling hot dogs. So if you want to be a tiger in your industry, you shouldn't be out in the rough or selling hot dogs. You just need to keep your focus. And it really is just amazing how that's resonating with me. I don't think it's any different than any other conversation we would have about keeping your focus or staying in your lane or any of those kinds of things. But for some reason on that day, it just really woke me up to a foolish move on my part. So that's my thing. 2017, 2018, man, I am in the fairway. That's the only place I'm going to be, is in the fairway.
Awesome. Well, I'll have to bring a hot dog cart for you to the NSA convention, yeah, and then I'll watch you smash it to bits with a 3-iron.
There you go. And I'll be going, ooh, look at Phil's cool hot dog cart. I'm jealous.
What kind of mustard does that guy have? What the heck?
Spicy mustard.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, I'd actually bring a Polish sausage because, you know, being from Wisconsin and all, I like, well, a little bit of spice, or maybe a spicy Italian. So, you know, if you go to Miller Park, the racing sausages, they've got 5 sausages now. Let's see, the hot dog, the bratwurst, Italian, Polish, and the chorizo. So there we go.
Oh, now I'm getting hungry. We got to change the topic.
All right, we'll change the topic. So let's really change it. Let's talk about networking, Lori. You talked about one before about this whole pocket idea about how people don't network, or worse yet, they don't even ask for the business. So talk to me about this whole business card game that you used to talk about, because I think that's instructive for folks that are doing some in-person or even some online business.
Right. Well, as a speaker, I'm always looking for ways to get the message across that isn't the same old, because those audiences have listened to so many of us. How can it be different? And so I like to illustrate points. And so if I have an audience, let's use like a large chamber of commerce type meeting where there's a variety of businesses in the room. They don't all work for the same company. Before the event starts, I'll go from table to table and meet people, but I'll ask everybody for their cards. Now, a lot of people do this, pass the hat, throw the cards in, but I do it a little differently. I actually take each card individually, look at it, look at the person, visit with them for 30 seconds about their business. But here's the key. I make a decision if in my real life, do I have a need for this service? Even if I'm, you know, I live in Illinois, even if I'm in Florida, I'll do this, even though I wouldn't bring a painter into my home who lives in Florida, right? You with me? I play the game as if I'm living in that community. And so I look at that card and I say, do I have a need for this service? And if the answer is yes, I put that business card in my right pants pocket or jacket pocket. If I don't have a need for your service, I finish up that conversation and I politely put that card in my left pocket. And my hope is that I make it through the 50 to 100 attendees before it's time to speak. Do the best I can. When it's time to speak, somewhere in the speech, I will tee up the story a little better than I'm doing for you right now, but I'll explain to the audience what I've done. And then here's the key. I'll say, there are five of you, or however many there are. Let's say it's five. There are five of you who have made it to my right pocket. And your job is to figure out which five of you are in my pocket that I need your product or service in my life, and I'm willing to pay for it. Your job is to figure it out. And then I go on to explain, you know, the easiest way to figure it out is you walk up and you say, Lori, I'm Phil Gerbachek. I want to know if I'm in your right pocket. Like, how much easier can it get? I tell you, that's how you do it. And I don't know if people think I'm kidding and I'm just using it as an illustration, but I've done it many times over the years, and it is rare, extremely rare, that people will come up and ask, am I in your right pocket? And that just blows me away. Like, why would you not ask the question? So in a real setting, you're not going to be that bold. You're not going to say, am I in your right pocket? But you may want to say, hey, this is what I provide as a service. Is this something you might need in your business? Then shut up and wait for the answer. Put the hard period. Wait for the answer. And when I say, you know, Phil, I actually do need some help with that, then I always ask, when should you call me, Phil? If I really told you in real life, I need what you're selling.
It's got to be at least a month. Well, at least a month, maybe two. I don't want to be desperate, Lori. I don't know. I think you're going to call me, right? I mean, I should never call.
That's exactly what people think. And we didn't even set that up, but we're laughing about it, but that's what people do. I don't want to seem too desperate. So you would hand me your card and say, Lori, here's my card. I'm here whenever you need me. Just give me a call. You and I have both done that. If we're honest, we've both done it.
Of course.
Right? Yep. Because it's up to you. If you want me bad enough, you'll call. Well, instead, I always encourage people, not only do you give me your card, but you ask for my contact information in return. And then I always say to people, hey, Phil, are you going to be in the office tomorrow? I'm around tomorrow afternoon. Would that be a good time to give you a call? I do it right away. And people said, gosh, doesn't that sound like you're kind of ambulance chasing? Aren't you kind of, you know, my whole thing is, it's raining here right now. It really is. If I have a hole in my roof, do I wish that my roofer would wait a week to call me back because he doesn't want to seem too desperate? No, I have a hole. I got a problem. I want the roofer. In fact, if he can come over today, that would be fantastic. And that's the key to sales. We have to see ourselves as the solution. So, you know, if you have an answer to one of my problems, why would I want you to wait a week, a month, or never to contact me? I want you to reach out and say, I got your answer. Are you ready? Are you ready for the solution? And if people will try this, it's not as hard as it sounds, but it comes down to the confidence you were talking about before. You have to believe you have the solution and that you're not, how do I want to say this? The client is not doing you the favor when they hire you. Nobody's doing anybody a favor. They have a need. You have a solution. It's called a transaction, and it's built around a relationship. It's around an engagement. And that's about as simple as it gets when we peel everything away.
Yeah, it sure is. So one thing that I would add to that is, if you're going to invest the time to go to a networking meeting, make sure that you leave yourself a block of time the next day on your calendar to make those darn follow-ups. I mean, because this isn't magic, right? This is not magic. If you take the time to go meet 175 people last night, and you determine that seven of them are people that need your product or service, those seven people should be the first people you call, not because they're easy, but because they're the right people to call and ones that you can actually do business with.
You are so right. And I always tell people, if you're going to go to an event like that, see if they'll give you the list of registered attendees in advance. Sometimes they will, sometimes they won't. But I always look at it in advance and say, who are the main people I'd like to meet? And be reasonable. I can only meet, truly spend time with, maybe 3 to 5 people in an event like that. And if there's somebody really hot on my list, I'm going to make sure that I sit next to them for the breakfast or the lunch or whatever it is, and I'm going to be bold about it. So let's say you're my person. I might even hover around the registration table with my coffee in hand, kind of not stalking, but just waiting for you to arrive. And when you do, I might go up and go, Phil, I've been waiting to meet you. My name's Lori Guest, blah, blah, blah. I'll do the introduction and then see how it goes, see if we connect at all. And if we do, I might say, hey, would you like to join me for breakfast this morning? And most of the time, those people are relieved to have somebody to sit with. But I wait to see, did we click or is it awkward and you're kind of trying to get away from me? I mean, I gotta see what the situation is. But I'm not going to go to an event like that cold and not have a strategy for connecting. That's what network is. To me, one of my speeches used to be called Stop Networking, Start Tunneling. Networking is when you go and throw out a bunch of business cards and you hope somebody calls you. Tunneling is identifying who and then digging down and digging down and digging until we get to some oil down there. And if I'm halfway done digging and there's no oil, you're not connecting, you're not interested in me, I don't take that personally. I move on to the next tunnel and dig again.
That's awesome. That another delicious metaphor there, Lori. Mm-hmm. That totally, totally works. I like the idea of tunneling. And I have to say, it's fascinating to me to think about how many people have a stack of 1,000 business cards on their desk that they're staring at like, geez, if only I knew how to open. When in reality, we don't need 1,000 business cards.
That's right.
We have the best 10 and we follow up immediately with a conversation. Forget all this crap about go connect to them on social, right? Just get real. Make the phone call. Pick up the phone.
Exactly.
You know, see what happens.
And I'm a big fan of the like the BombBomb video greetings or whatever company you want to use. I know iJot, you know, does it, whatever. I'm a big fan of that because it brings some personality to it. Instead of it looking like a form letter email, I can quickly send out an email going, hey, Phil, it's Lori. You remember me? We had coffee yesterday. You know, you can add some humor to it if that's your way. I'll always add some sarcasm if I can because that's my style. But all of a sudden, you feel this connection, and I didn't grab you in the middle of something by calling you. I'm sending you the follow-up email going, I felt like we had a really good conversation. If I don't hear from you, I'm going to follow up in about a week and see if I can help you with blah, blah, whatever the sales call is going to be, but it's not robotic. That's the key here. It can't sound like the same message I'm going to record 9 more times today. It's got to be a link between you and me to create this engagement and this relationship.
Awesome. Great advice. So you're saying putting up a Craigslist missed connections is maybe a little overboard or?
Yeah. I think that's overboard.
All right. I'll stop doing that then. That's good to know. So
that's not going
to
work.
So BombBomb right now is one of the best ones out there. iJot actually killed itself.
Oh, did they?
Last year. They did. Yep. Okay. So yeah, our speaker buddy, Beth Z, said that iJot is no more. So we will have to find other ones. I believe OneMob is one of the other ones that you can use for those video messages.
Well, I love me some Beth Z. Man, that girl, she knows what's going on in the tech app world, doesn't she? Oh, my gosh. I can't keep up. That's not my world. But I am a BombBomb subscriber. And there are so many creative ways to use it. And again, I have to go hot dog cart, because all of a sudden I'm creating a campaign. But I can use it in its simple form to make a connection. And that's what I have to stay focused on.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of times simple is best. Mm-hmm. Our strategy should be to simplify, and to do things that we actually should be doing instead of everything we could possibly be doing.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of people, I don't know how many speakers listen to your podcast, but speakers ask me all the time, how do you stay busy? How do you keep your calendar full? And the answer is, I don't make cold calls. I never did. I started my business 20 years ago, sending 36 direct mail letters to my niche audience, people who already knew me and liked my work. That's where I started. And I've never done cold calls. Now, do I chase leads? Absolutely. We all have to chase leads. But I don't pick up just random strangers and call them and try and get them to go on a date. I mean, that's not going to work. And so it is this finding opportunities and tunneling down to create a connection and provide a solution. That's how you get more business. Whether you're a speaker or any other kind of entrepreneur that's listening, is that people will have to want to do business with you. We all know that. But how are you specifically driving that emotion in your relationships?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Let's talk a little bit more about that, because I do know, you know, there are some speakers and even business owners that listen in. And I think that there's definitely some value there. So you talked about sending out mailers. So this is 2017, Lori. Does mail still work?
You know, I still like a stamp once in a while, although I don't use it anymore for that type of a lead type thing. I use it much more in the handwritten thank you note. You know, that's gone by the wayside. People rarely do that. I make it a goal to send one piece of mail a day. I don't always meet that goal, but I try and send one a day, and that could be a follow-up to somebody. It could be just a quick, I'm thinking of you today. Whatever it is, I try and use a stamp a day. And when you think about that, that's, you know, right? 365 touches. And I can promise you that on the other end, when you open that envelope, for a moment, you go, oh my gosh, that was so nice. How nice of her to do that. Where if I send you an email, you think about me for a second, but there's not much emotion. There's 50, 60 more of them in your box. But if you open your mailbox today and there's a card from me, you're forced to think about me for a moment. And we hope that is, gosh, I need to talk to her again. And I do believe in mail, but not mass mail.
Yeah. I agree. Just like mass networking, right? The whole goal is to be targeted. And I think for the right customer with the right message, mailing makes perfect sense. But buying a mailing list of 1,000 people, that didn't work barely before.
That's right. It barely
works now. In fact, it works less now. So instead of buying 1,000, you'd have to buy 10,000 or 100,000, much like a cold call where your goal is to get, let me see how many I can do today. It's robotic and forced. Whereas if we do just even a little bit of prep and really focus on the connection, I think we can be a lot more effective.
And we need to focus on, if we are going to mail something, it's not how great am I. You need to know how great I am. Nobody cares how great you are. Your family, people who love you, barely care how great you are. Your strangers do not care. What they care about is what? Themselves. And so they should be looking at their copy and making sure that it's providing that solution to pain. Sales 101, provide the solution to pain. But that's not usually what I see with stuff that people send out or email out or post.
Yeah.
So it's an important piece.
Yeah. So that big full color picture of me in a Speedo, I should probably take that down. Stop using that.
Yeah. Yeah. Anytime you're in a Speedo, you need to take it down. Not the Speedo. The ad.
Oh, good. Oh, I was writing that down. Take down. Speedo. That's good.
I know.
I'm glad you clarified. That's important. So that's so funny. Yeah. So we've covered lots of stuff. I'm curious, you know, if we're going to get started today, like working towards creating a better culture of service, creating a better culture of accountability and a better culture of specificity. Those are the three things we kind of talked about today. Leaders need to be accountable. Customer service needs to go beyond, right? Invite people into play instead of sending me away. And we talked about the importance of specificity when it comes to mailers and networking. How would someone get started, Lori, with any or all of those today?
Well, I always want to start with what's the culture of the team? Where do we sit right now? What are we doing that works? Where are we missing opportunities? Well, the part that really jazzes me is missed opportunities that cost you nothing to fix. That's where I want everybody to start. And most of the time people start with what big change can we make? And usually that comes with a price tag that the owner or the manager doesn't want to spend. And so I really like easy things. So like the first one that comes to mind is I like people to look at transitions. This is the way you move your customer from point A to point B within the system, whether that be from phone call to representative, whether it be from greeter person to salesperson, wherever the transitions are in your organization, are they meant to power position and move people towards a sale, or are we actually just moving a human being from one place to another? It costs you nothing to take a look at transitions and improve them, and it can immediately impact your bottom line. just with different phrases that you use and the way in which you transition people. So my short answer to your question is I want people to look at missed opportunities that cost them very little or nothing to fix. It's a matter of words and behaviors.
Mm, that's good. That's a great place to start. I love it. Really, really good. So if people want to get more of your goodness, Lori, if they want to connect more with you and they want to learn more about secret shopping and customer service and all the great stuff that you provide, where would you send them to go on the internet?
They can go straight to my website, which is lauriguest.com, and I spell it L-A-U-R-I-E, and then guest, G-U-E-S-T, like a guest in a hotel. And they can find everything that we offer there, the keynotes and the online training, the secret shopping. It's all there in one convenient spot.
Awesome. Lori Guest, it is LauriGuest.com. My friend Lori, you are awesome. Thank you so much for sharing so much of your goodness today. It's been really fun to talk to you.
It's always fun to talk to you, Phil. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.